Well, we've been talking about being steadfast and immovable. And more than that, we've been talking about how we can always be abounding in the work of the Lord. Now, we read from Colossians, the first chapter, about how we individually can bear fruit in every good work. That makes me think about how when the apostle wrote 1 Corinthians 15, he said, know that your labor in the Lord is never wasted. I've done some things in my life that turned out to be a real waste. I don't know about you, but I've worked really hard to do some things that just didn't turn out. Sometimes it's because I didn't work hard enough. Sometimes it's because I didn't know what I was doing when I started the work. And sometimes the work I was doing just really wasn't all that important. But that's not the way it is with God. We bear fruit in every good work. That's what the American Standard Translation says about verse 10. Now, what is this every good work? Well, if you look at the book of Colossians, you see the apostle not only saying every good work will bear fruit, you see him saying what those good works are. So, in order to know whether we're involved in something that's going to bear fruit, it's important for us to understand what it is that we're being involved in. Now, the apostle in Colossians, the third chapter, begins to talk about what these good works are. And I'm convinced it's a lot broader than the way that I would define good works sometimes. Sometimes I think good works means that I'm out there teaching the gospel. Then yes, that's a good work. But that's not really what the apostle has in mind here in Colossians 1. Colossians 3, beginning at verse 18. Look at the way he describes what Christians do. He says, wives, be in subjection to your husbands, as is fitting in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives, and be not bitter against them. The relationship that husbands and wives have is something that inevitably bears fruit. Do you think about that very often? Do you think about that? Well, right now, today, we probably do think about that because Valentine's Day is coming up and we want to be nice to our husbands and our wives. But it's more than just being nice on Valentine's Day, isn't it? It's having the kind of relationship that God wants us to have with our husbands and our wives. It's doing the things that cause us to be a wifely person, just like we're a godly person. The apostle describes a little bit of this in 1 Corinthians 7. He says, a single woman cares for the things of the Lord, how she could please the Lord. I would say, by extension, a single man cares for the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. And the Apostle Paul was kind of in that position. He's a single man. Every one of his thoughts revolved around what he could do for the Lord. He says, a married woman cares for the things of her husband, how she may please her husband. I would, by extension, say a married man cares for the things of his wife, how he may please his wife. Does that mean that he loves the Lord any less? No. It just means that as we love our wives and as we love our husbands, we do it in the Lord. It impacts us. Was Paul able to do some things because he wasn't married that he couldn't have done if he had been married? Well, sure. He could go to the far-flung reaches of the empire, and he could preach, and he could do it and not worry about what was happening back home. You can't do that if you're married. You always worry about what's happening back home. You're always concerned about what's happening back home. Is that the work that God wants us to be involved in? That's a good work. The relationship between children and parents. The third chapter, again, here in Colossians. At verse 20, he says, children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing in the Lord. Fathers, provoke not your children that they be not discouraged. Kim was teaching a Bible class with some little ones, and she had them work on memory work. She always took passages and would choose an appropriate amount of that passage for the kids to work on, because these weren't very big kids. They weren't very old. And she was working with the kids, and the passage that they were to commit to memory was, children, obey your parents. In the Lord, did you put that on there too? Children, obey your parents in the Lord. One little girl stood up. She said her passage, and she put her hand on her hip, and she said, but I don't like it. I think she thought God was in cahoots with her parents. And she had to do what her parents said, because that was what God said. Now, as cute as the story is, it illustrates something. When we obey our parents, we are presenting the image of God. Jesus obeyed his father. And when we obey our parents, we're presenting that image to the world. Parents, provoke not your children. Is that hard to do? Yeah, sometimes. But we respond to our children in the way that God responds to us. He doesn't provoke us. We would never provoke our children. Workers, do your job well. That's a good work. That's the work of God. Servants, obey in all things them that are your masters, Paul says. Not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatever you do, work heartily as unto the Lord and not unto men. This is God's work. This is a good work that God wants us to be involved in. Work hard. That doesn't mean work to rule. And it doesn't mean quiet quitting. I heard that phrase just recently, quiet quitting. People who really don't want to work, but they don't want to quit. What image does that present to the people that are around us? That's not the way that God's people were or are. God has never been accepting of that kind of service. God has never expected his people to treat their masters that way. Now, James goes on and he expands this even more. He says, even the ones that are froward. That's an odd word. It's one that we don't use very often. But what it means is when you get a bad boss, behave like a Christian. And goodness only knows there are bad bosses out there. Whatever you do, work heartily as unto the Lord and not unto men. Bosses, treat your employees with dignity. That's God's work. Masters, render unto your servants that which is just and equal, knowing that you also have a master in heaven. Notice how many times and how many different ways he describes the activity that he's encouraging, and then he says, you have to do this because of the relationship that you have with God. 10 has a special relationship to the people that work for him. And I'm moved that he asked us to pray for them. That's an important concept. I was talking to him the other day. We were talking about the robbery. And he said, it's not just me, but I have all of those other people that work for me. And beyond that, I have to be responsible for all of those people that are in the store. So, yeah. I have to treat them with respect. I have to give them that which is just and equal. I can't mistreat them just because of the golden rule. You know, the one that says he who has the gold gets to make the rules. Doesn't work that way. It's a definition that's in common with other writers. Even the definition that Jesus used, most famously in Matthew, the 25th chapter. He presents a picture of all men gathered before him to stand in the day of judgment. And he talks about what they did. In that list of things that he did, that they did or didn't do, he never says, you didn't go out and preach. That's surprising, I guess. He says, I was sick. You didn't visit me. I was in prison. You didn't come see me. I was naked. You didn't help me. Depart. You are not prepared to be one of mine. James says in James, the first chapter, pure religion, undefiled before God the fatherless, God the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. Yes, I worry about myself. But I also need to visit the fatherless and the widows. I need to extend myself to those people. That's what God expects. Now, as we close this, I want to I want to think about this incredible irony that's presented in John, the 18th chapter. This is in the context of Jesus being crucified. The Jews have decided that he has to be put to death because he is questioning their position. They are going to deliver him to the Romans because they had to get the Romans to crucify him. They had the ability to make rules about their own religion, but they couldn't put him to death. So they had to get the Romans to do it for them. Caiaphas was the high priest, and that's where Jesus' religious trial took place, before Caiaphas. And it wasn't really a trial. It was just a kangaroo court. They'd made up their mind they were going to kill Jesus. But they brought him to Caiaphas. They put him on trial. And then after he had been with Caiaphas, they brought him to the Romans. They brought him to the Praetorium. That's a place of judgment. It was early. But the Jews decided, we can't go in there because we would be defiled if we did that, and then we couldn't take the Passover. Remember when all this is happening. This is during the Jewish Passover, what Ron described this morning. And they were more worried about taking the Passover than they were about killing Jesus. Passover cleanness meant that they couldn't go into the Praetorium. Now, there's a story that is recounted for us. Jesus responds to a Pharisee who asked him a question, who is my neighbor? And he tells a story that we're all very familiar with. It's the parable of the Good Samaritan. We know about what happened. Man was on the road, fell among thieves, he's beaten, he's robbed, and along comes a Levite. Levite didn't help him. He's a Jew. He didn't help him. Then along comes a priest, and he went to the other side of the road. But a Samaritan man came along the road. Now, the Jews hated the Samaritans. They thought of them as worse than dogs. They hated Samaritans. What did the Samaritan man do? Bound up his wounds, took him to an inn, maybe something that kind of functioned like a hospital. He said, take care of him. When I come, I'll cover his expenses or your expenses in taking care of him. Who do you suppose was doing the work of God? I know Levites. Between the ages of 30 and 50, they had to serve at the temple. And no doubt they said, we're serving at the temple. We're important. We're doing the work of God. And they came to this man laying in the road, beaten and bloodied, and walked by on the other side. The work that they were doing, or the work that they thought they were doing, didn't bear any fruit. Think about that for a minute. The good work that God calls upon us to do always bears fruit. We'll never waste our time doing the good work. Number one, it'll always impact me. It always turns around and benefits me. Not just that it makes me feel good, but I'm building up treasure in heaven. So yes, when I do a good work, it benefits me. When I treat my wife the way that I should treat my wife, it benefits me. And sometimes it benefits other people. Sometimes other people will see that and say, you know, I want to have something like that. How did you get that? And I get to explain to them, it's Jesus. That's what's at the core of this. And maybe they become interested in Jesus, and it so impacts them that they put him on in baptism. That would be wonderful. It might not work out that way. Does that mean it's wasted? No. I got the benefit from it. It's never wasted. It's just sometimes it bears more fruit than it does at other times. When you put Jesus at the center of everything, the good work that we do bears fruit. And that fruit bears desire, and that desire bears fruit, and brings about good works, and the good works bear fruit. It's just kind of an unending loop. Which comes first, the chicken or the egg? Which comes first, the desire or the good work? I don't know. I don't think it makes any difference. If you do the good work, you'll want to do more. That's the way it always is. We are going to be always abounding in the work of the Lord, because we know that our work is never, ever wasted. We want you to be a part of it. We want you to decide today that you're going to work for God. It's an amazing thing that when we're all together, we build off of each other. And I get to see Charlie treating his wife the way that he ought to treat his wife. And that impacts me. What a wonderful thing. If we hadn't been here, if Charlie hadn't been here, if I hadn't been here, I wouldn't have gotten that strength. But we decided that we're going to work for God. And if we do that, it will bear fruit. You want to put on Jesus in baptism? We'll help you do that. If you have not borne fruit, find somebody to show you how it's done.